Accession number 20609, Reel 2.
Eddie Treacher, Reel 2. You were just telling me that you didn't know anybody who had actually done that.
Quite right, yeah. I didn't know anybody had actually done that. And then we went on...
Would you have been prepared to have done it?
I suppose if I had to have done it, yes, I would. I'm not the squeamish type anyway. But I think I would have done it if necessary.
And you said that you had to learn how to kill somebody with one blow. How would you have done that?
Well, you'd get hold of that and hit them across the back of the neck, or you know, across the side of the neck, where the actual jugular vein is, and things like that. You know, it's or strangle them. We used to know how to strangle you, and you could strangle somebody with his helmet anyway, by pulling it back and holding it there.
Any of the training that you couldn't handle yourself?
No. Everything they wanted us to do, we did. And, I mean, you had to. Otherwise, if you didn't pass their standards, you wouldn't become a commando. You would be returned to unit. And I didn't want that. But I didn't feel as though I couldn't do it. I felt quite good.
What else do you remember from Agni Kerry?
Well, feeling cold and wet. We were feeling cold and very wet. But I was glad to see the end of it, believe me. And what we used to do as well, we used to go to Speen Bridge. We used to do a 7 mile run and march, what they call 7 mile, full march in order. That's all the gear on, you know, carrying our rifles and our rucksacks. And we used to do a run and march to Speen Bridge, and that was 3.5 miles and 3.5 miles back, so it was 7 miles. And, you know, there was a competition of each troop who can do it the fastest. You'd never believe it. There was that sort of spirit, and it was a good commando spirit. You know, we'll beat you next time and things like that. And when we got to the end of the march, we had to slope arms and march into the depot properly. No slashing into the depot. We had to march into the depot, which was very good training.
And then what?
Well, then they probably dismiss you and get you ready for the next stint we've got to do. So it's as easy as that. But we went through all that training, and it was good. Oh, then we used to do a mountain march over the mountains, do a 20-mile march. And of course, these 20-mile marches over mountains turned out to be 30-mile marches, because you're not in a straight line. You're not just marching 20 miles down the road. You're marching over the top of mountains. And that was brilliant. I used to enjoy that. Very hard work, but I used to enjoy that. It's better than walking along the road, believe me.
Where did you go to after Agni Kerry?
After Agni Kerry, we went back to our billets in Ayr. And that was getting near Christmas. And lo and behold, we came on Christmas leave, which was wonderful. And the lady in Mrs. Lawson, her daughter, had married a commando from Number 3 Commando. He was a sergeant, Sergeant Denny. He was a nice bloke, and her daughter was nice. And in the billets, I'll tell you a little bit of story about that, in the billets, which was lovely. And myself and this Georgie Hall was in a billet, the young fellow that got killed at the end of the war. So we were given a bedroom. So the old lady says to us, she said, "There's a story about that bedroom." So I said, "Oh yeah." So I said, "What is it?" So she said, "Well," she said, "as you know, Margaret has got a diseased hip." That's her daughter. And she said she could never walk when she was a girl. She could never walk. So I said, "Oh." But she said she walks now. you know, she limps a bit, but she does walk, you see. So I said, oh. So she said, but there's a little story about that room. When she was laying in bed one day, she said, I was out here doing the washing up and things like that. She was 11 years old. Now, she'd never been out of bed in her life. Lifted out of bed, but could never get out of bed. So she says that she was laying in bed one day, and a man stood at the bottom of her bed in a white robe, and he says to her, Margaret, get up and walk. So she said, I can't, I've never walked in my life. He said, Margaret, I command you to get up and walk. She said, I can't. So he said, get up and walk. And she said, Margaret got out of bed and she walked out to me here into the kitchen. She said, and I said to her, what are you doing in that bed, Margaret? She said, well, the man in that room told me to get up and walk. And she said, I did. So she said, that's the story of that room. So I said to my mate, George, we're all right here, George. You and I are never going to get killed if we sleep in that bed. But that was my sense of humour. Like, you know, well, we won't get killed, George. And he used to say to me, Tom, he says, you are wicked. He said, look, you get us killed, you will. So I said, no, we won't die. We'll be all right, like, you know. But he did get killed in the end, funny enough. But that is one of the little stories I had.
And after your second session at Ayr? What happened after your second session at Ayr?
Oh, at Ayr. Well, we went on Christmas leave, and that was smashing. That was nice because I got home to my family and they were well pleased to see us. And I think that was our first bit of leave we had, which was very nice. And after that, we just done a little bit of training up there. Then we left Ayr, and I think we came down to Hilsea Barracks. That's right, Hilsea Barracks, near Southsea, Portsmouth. And we done a bit of training down there. And we got issued with our green berets. That was wonderful. That was wonderful. Because to get our green beret, we thought that was absolutely marvellous. And we were told how to shrink them, put them in hot boiling water to shrink them, and, you know, to make them look nice. So.
You haven't missed a session at Darling in Ayrshire.
Oh, yes, I did. Would that be all right?
Yes.
Well, I did.
In Argyllshire.
Yeah, we went to Argyllshire for another session of training. As at Darling. Yeah, and that was just like the other training. It's more mountain stuff, you know, mountain warfare and things like that. That's all that was. We weren't very long up there, for about a couple of weeks, and that was that.
And then?
Then we came south. That's right. Then we came south to Hilsea Barracks, where we got our green berets.
So this is the early part of 1944.
That's right, early part of 1944.
And you were still in 4-5 Commando?
Well, we was 4-5 then. We became 4-5 Commando. Although we was 4-5 when we went up to the training session, we became 4-5. We weren't really Commandos till we finished our training. Once we finished our training and come down south, then we got our green berets.
Were you in a brigade at this time?
No, we weren't in a brigade at that time. But when we was at Hilsea Barracks, they decided that number one SS Brigade needed another commando in it. That consisted of 3 commando, 4 commando, 6 commando, and because we was one of the best commandos, the Marine commandos up at Achnacarry, they decided that it should be us that went into the brigade. And we was called Number 1 SS Brigade. Number 1 SS Brigade. Special Service.
Where did you move to after Hilsea?
Then we went to Eastbourne into Civvy Billets, Eastbourne, into Civvy Billets, which was nice again. I had another nice landlady, and Mr. and Mrs. Hipgrave. They were very, very nice. And what we was doing there is we was training, doing exercises once again. And the thing is that being a sniper, I had a marksman's badge. I had cross rifles, in actual fact, on my sleeve. And being a marksman, they made me a sniper. But I'd never been on a sniping course. So I was at Eastbourne, and anyway, we used to do what they call house-to-house fighting. Well, you know, you see it on the television, house-to-house fighting. And one day, they said, righto, now we want somebody from B Troop to dress up as Germans. So they gave me a German uniform. They gave my mate a German uniform. It's your Georgie all again. So we went marching through Eastbourne in German uniforms. Nobody ever stopped us. Perhaps it's because we were speaking English, I don't know, but nobody ever stopped us. But we went to this housing estate where they were doing this exercise, and of course we had to hide ourselves as the enemy, and B Troop come in and they had to find us and shoot us, of course. And of course it's all dummy ammunition type of thing, you know, blanks, and a lot of noise. And we had to fall down dead. I mean, you can't win against the British. So there we was, laying in the middle of the road, dead. So that was good. It was quite funny. That was quite funny.
Whereabouts in Eastbourne was this training done?
It was one of the estates there that got bombed. And they never bothered about building, so they use it as a training place, training area. So that was quite good.
Can you tell me about being selected to be a sniper and the training
yes,
you had, please?
Yes, yes. One day I was on parade, and the sergeant major come up to me and said, Tommy Treacher. So I said, yes, sergeant. So he said to me, you're going to be going on a course as a sniper. I said, what? So I said, he said, you're going to be a sniper. I said, but I don't want to be a sniper. So he said, you're on the course as a sniper. He said, we're going on mountain warfare training, and you're a sniper. Away you go. You've got to go to Gosport, to number 11 training course. He said, get your gear, pack it, off you go. So I thought, oh, God, like, you know, going as a sniper. Like. So off I went, and it was a 10-day course. Went to Gosport, you know, reported to Gosport, and this Colonel Armstrong introduced himself, and we had a Captain White and a Sergeant. Sergeant tells it on it. I forget. Sergeant Martin, and he was my trainer, Sergeant Martin, for me to be a sniper. I think he had a couple of people each. They had a couple of people each, two sergeants, because they were actually training us. So he was one of Lord Lovett's scouts. You ever heard of Lord Lovett's scouts? Well, he was a Lord Lovett scout, and he was a really nice bloke. And he used to always shoot with both his eyes open. He could shoot a rifle looking through the telescope and looking through that way. It was absolutely fantastic, it was. But he coached me, and we had what they call a moving target. So what we had to do is we had to start in a laying position to shoot five rounds at a target, get up, run 100 yards to the 200 position, and kneel down and shoot five rounds at the target, and run another 100 yards for a 100-yard shoot, and we should have to stand up and do that shoot. And it was very difficult. And you can imagine, after running 200 yards, he's trying to stand there and shoot a rifle from a standing position. Very, very awkward. Try and shoot a rifle in a standing position anyway, but we'd already run 200 yards. But I'd done quite well out of it. Quite done quite well, And this is the reason I got the highest individual scores and things like that, you know, because I was a very good shot. And that's how I won the medal.
Can you tell me the story about how the medal was sent to your parents, please?
Oh, yes. The Colonel Armstrong, he was making a speech to us and telling us how well we'd done on field craft and sniping and things like that. And he said, of course, we'd give a medal for the highest individual score. He said, that is EC Treacher, 45 Royal Marine Commando. And I went, I stood up, I went, oh. He said, come on, Treacher. He said, come out here. So anyway, I went out to him and he said to me, I haven't got the medal at the moment. He said, but I will send it on to you. What is your address? So I said, well, I said, you know, could you send it home to my parents? Like, so he said, yes, certainly, I'll do that. And the only reason I did that, because I didn't want it to go to the unit, because I know what would have happened. I'd have been made to stand out in front of all these people and tell them that I've won a medal for shooting. I said, I didn't want that. I wasn't fancy that. So I sent it to my parents. And they did get the medal. And they wrote me a letter saying they've got a medal that I've won. And I had to explain to them how I won it. But the medal now is up there on the shelf with a certificate, a sniping certificate. So, and I was quite pleased about that, being the highest individual scorer.
Did you go on any other sniper courses?
I went on one, and that's the deer stalking one. That's the same as Derek Capered went on. You know, we went out up in the to the mountains, and we shot a few deers, like, you know, a few deer. And we always went upwind to shoot them, which means you can't shoot them in front because they could smell you. To come from the sides or to the rear so that they can't smell you, because a deer's got a good sense of smell and they can tell when somebody's around. But we used to shoot them, used to skin them and bring them down to the hospitals. Actually, it went to the hospital. All his meat went to the hospitals. So, and I didn't very much like skinning them. I wasn't that type, like, not that. That didn't do me at all. But it was very interesting.
Any other details you can tell me about the deer stalking?
Not much really, but it's just the fact that we went up there finding these deers, shooting them, you know, and making sure that they were killed. You know, you didn't just shoot to wound them, you shoot to kill them, you know, you didn't. But that's about all, you know.
Did that take place before or after Gosport?
After Gosport. Yeah, after Gosport. A little time after Gosport, but that was good.
What else do you remember from this time?
Only the unit moving around, like, you know, different places, really. And we wasn't doing anything in particular, like, you know. But we knew that we was going to be soon be in action, because there was the rumour that there would be the second front sooner or later, you know. So I went back to Eastbourne. And we had a parade, actually, in Eastbourne, where Lord Lovett come and inspected us. I'm remembering these things from different places, things now. For Lord Lovett inspected us. And the good thing about it was, it was all lined up, and Lord Lovett come along, and he says to the troops, gentlemen, he says, your flashes you've got on, which are silk screens, will not be worn anymore. You will wear embroidered combine operation badges, which is up in the picture there. And also, you will not double your boots, you will polish your boots. I thought, oh, good, lovely, this dubbing's terrible stuff. And he said, you are now in the 1st SS Brigade. And also, he looked at suits and he said, this man's got a new suit. He's going to have a new suit. He should have a new suit. And it was brilliant. We felt quite good.
What was the idea of changing from silk to embroidered?
Oh, I don't really know. But in actual fact, the badge itself was a better looking badge. The screen silk badge was just a thing print, you know, it's a print. But the other one was embroidered.
And then?
Well, then, I mean, we had the parade and we were dismissed. We went back to our units and then we're back on parade again for other things, like, you know, but nothing important. Lord Lovett, like, he left us and we got on with it. And then we done some exercises. One exercise, we went out on a landing craft and we came, at Eastbourne. We done a night exercise. And what we had to do is go out to sea on landing craft and come into New Haven. Now, in New Haven, they had the Home Guard there and a Dorchestershire Regiment. And Dorchestershire Regiment was a new regiment made up. And New Haven, they had the Home Guard. So what we had to do, we had to land there and take New Haven, capture New Haven. So we came in a landing craft. You'd never believe this. We came in a landing craft. We got into the dock. We got on the dock. We moved through the lines. And on the station, went through the station. And on the station was about 30 Home Guard with their sergeant. And the sergeant was saying to them, "Righto, lads, we're going to be raided tonight. So keep your eyes bobbing, you know. Keep looking," he said. "We're going to be raided by the commandos." So I said, "Right." But one of the blokes said to the sergeant, "Sergeant, I think there's something moving over there." And it was us. He was saying, "There's something moving." And he was saying to him, "Keep quiet." He said, "While I'm talking, you keep quiet. You're not to say anything while I'm talking." And there was that little lot creeping through that lot. We captured them all, didn't we? We captured all the... And what we did, we said to them and said, "Right, you can go home now. Providing, don't come out and carry on with the exercise. You can go home." And they said to us, "Oh, thanks, mate. Let's go. We're going." And they went home. And we did, and we, you know, we outrun the Dorchestershire Regiment. I mean, that was a new little regiment coming together. But then, after that, we had to make our own way back to our billets. So you can imagine us, we come out by boat, and we've got to make our own way back to Eastbourne. So, all manner of things. We did all manner of things to get home. We got back.
From the seafront?
Yeah, from the seafront. We got back all right. Different things we've done.
But that incident took place at Seaford, you said?
At New Haven.
New Haven.
New Haven, yeah. That's a little dock at New Haven. But that was a real laugh, actually. But we captured the place without even any bother at all. We got there and there was no opposition. Our worst job was getting home.
What happened next?
Well, we just didn't do much more. You know, we just got back home. We went down on parade next morning. And that was it. Well, just the usual thing. On parade and exercising. The usual thing. So... then we was told that D-Day was coming along. So we got transferred to Southampton. We got transferred to Southampton, near Southampton, in a camp. It was an American camp. I can't tell you the name of it, but it was an American camp. And once we got in there, we could not get out. Some did, but they weren't allowed. They got out, but some did. In there, we was being briefed about D-Day. We was all being briefed. For instance, we had maps and we had models where the aircraft had been taking photos of the place, and we knew exactly where we've got to land. Exactly. We was going to land by the casino on Queen Red Beach, Sword. And... I think that lasted for about a week or so before we went, you know, before we went on to the D-Day landings. And I was playing like a base, what they call hardball, like a baseball it was. So anyway, we was playing the baseball and I was behind the catcher. And the chap hit the ball and he threw the bat behind him and it hit me right between the eyes. What a, oh Christ, I finished up with two black eyes. You never seen anything like it. Two black eyes. And I landed the day with two black eyes. So it was brilliant, it was. But anyway, all the... we were doing all the landing... We knew exactly what we was going to do on the day because we'd looked at all these maps and we'd looked at all the models and everything. We just knew exactly what we were going to do. And after about 7 days, they said, righto, here we go. Like the 5th of June, we got into the lorries, got all our equipment, got into the lorries, and we went to a place called Wasatch, as in the Solent, Southampton in the Solent. From there, we was in Wasatch, and we was waiting to get onto the landing craft. And we had a game of football against number 3 Commando while we was waiting to go on a landing craft. They dropped our gear and said, come on, boys, we'll have a game of football. But nobody, and I mean nobody, seemed afraid. Nobody, D-Day, it was, they were looking forward to it. And you'd never believe it. The morale in number 1 SS Brigade was so high. It was absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. And nobody thought about getting killed. Nobody thought about getting killed. Because then we got the orders to get onto the landing craft. I was in number 518 craft. Number 518. We were flying the white ensign. We got onto the craft. They said to us, righto, lads, stow your gear down below. You can come up top after you stowed your gear down below. So we did that. And our colonel came aboard our boat. The colonel of 45 Commando was on our boat. And also, we were the, as I said, we had the white ensign flying, which was a flotilla leader. And went on, settled down. And at 5 o'clock, we moved off. 5 o'clock, we moved off to Normandy. And as we were going down the Solent, you'd never seen a sight like it. You'd never seen a sight like it. We was going through all these ships. There was ships everywhere, loaded with guns, loaded with tanks, loaded with lorries and troops and things like that. But our little craft was sailing out of Wasatch. And as we were going out of Wasatch, our piper, Bill Millen, was piping us out on board of another boat. And you hear the pipes, you know, Scott, all the pipes were sounding beautiful, like, and everybody was cheering, like, you know, because not one of us wore a tin helmet. Not one of us wore a tin helmet. We landed in green berries. Everybody had a green berry, because that was, Lord Lovett said that the steel helmets are too cumbersome to carry. So we'll land in green berries.
So right. Bill Millen was playing across as you cross the channel?
Yes, but only when we come out of Wasatch. So that, you know, he's just playing us out. And everybody was cheering, like, you know. But once we got to sea, it was very, very rough. And it was rough. So we was all down in the hold then. All the troops were down the hole. And what we were doing, cleaning our weapons, writing letters to our families. I wrote a letter to my wife, like, you know, my girlfriend at the time. And to say that, you know, to pray for us and things like that, you know. But anyway, we got things organised and we sailed across the channel and it was really rough. And then we was getting there. Next morning, we arrived at Normandy. The East Yorks and the East Lancs had already gone in and we was coming towards you, and when we come on and we got the orders, on deck, get your gear on deck. So we got our stuff ready. When we got up on deck, my God, it's all hell had let loose. All hell had let loose. There was guns firing from the boats, there was aircraft flying over, there was bullets flying around, like, you know, we was about 800 yards out to sea, and now we're on the run-in. And we were standing there on the boat, we was on the amidships. the Matlows were ready to push the ramps down because it was one of these landing craft. You had ramps, you push down the ramps. And the four Matlows were there, ready to push the ramps down. We was in midships, ready to go off. And about 400 yards out to sea, or 400 metres out to sea, there was such a